Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 8.
So today we're looking at specifically Chapter 8. The original Chinese title is...
Right, which translates roughly to the Buddha creates sutras to spread blissful paradise. Guanyin receives a decree to go to Chang'an.
Yeah, that title alone tells you something big is about to kick off.
Absolutely. The scene is basically set, right? The Buddha, he's just returned to Thunderclap Monastery. This is after sorting out all that chaos in heaven, you know, with the monkey.
Right, that monkey.
Exactly. And the welcome he gets, it's huge. We're talking Buddhas, Arhats, Bodhisattvas, everyone's there. It really shows his status, you know, after restoring order.
Okay, so more than just a welcome back. And he gets straight to it, doesn't he? He makes these really deep statements.
He does. He talks about profound wisdom seeing through the three realms.
And that line about the fundamental origin being ultimately still and silent, like empty space.
Yeah.
Utterly devoid of anything. It's a core concept. And he links it directly to dealing with the monkey.
Saying that whole event is kind of beyond normal understanding, the beginning of birth and death itself. Wow. So defeating the monkey wasn't just crowd control.
Not at all. It's like by handling that chaos, he's reasserting the fundamental emptiness, the stillness that's underneath everything. The way phenomena appear is thus. It's a statement about the nature of reality.
So reality reaffirmed, and then things start happening on a more practical level. The Jade Emperor gives him rewards.
Exactly. Recognition from the top. 500 years after some really big event up in the heavens, and there's this huge gathering, and then the Buddha announces this Ulambana festival, Barry.
With a treasure basin, flowers, fruits. And Ulambana, you know, it often involves themes of remembrance, maybe offering gratitude, particularly towards ancestors or past events.
Okay, so remembrance and gratitude.
Connect that to this gathering. Maybe it's looking back at that major event 500 years ago.
Interesting thought. And then the bodhisattvas step up with poems, praising blessings, prosperity, longevity.
Yes.
Like a real outpouring.
Shows the respect, the reverence they have for him and what he's achieved. It highlights the good things that come from his wisdom.
But then, the focus shifts down to earth, to us in the southern Jambudvipa. And the Buddha's assessment isn't exactly glowing, is it? Greed, lust, fighting.
Yeah, he paints a pretty grim picture of humanity down there. It's quite the contrast with the harmony up in heaven.
Definitely sets the stage. All that conflict and suffering.
Which leads directly to his next big idea, the solution.
The threefold canon of scriptures, the Heijia, he wants to send it east.
Right, and this is no pamphlet. We're talking 35 parts, over 15,000 volumes.
15,000, covering cosmology, earthly stuff, and delivering spirits. It's like the ultimate manual.
So that's a good way to put it. It's the core of Buddhist wisdom, designed to show the path, covers every angle.
But there's a catch, isn't there? He's worried.
Yeah, he thinks the people in the East, us humans, might be too, well, foolish, too caught up in our own stuff.
Too distracted by the greed and fighting he just mentioned.
Exactly. To appreciate these deep teachings. So he needs someone special, someone powerful, someone compassionate.
To find a really devout believer, someone willing to make this incredibly dangerous trip west to get the scriptures.
It's not just fetching a book. It's an epic quest. It emphasizes that real knowledge, real transformation requires effort, serious dedication.
You can't just download enlightenment.
Yeah, pretty much.
So who answers the call?
None other than Guanyin Bodhisattva, the embodiment of compassion.
Ah, Guanyin. The description is amazing jewels, cloud-like hair, auspicious light, the compassionate master of Mount Putuo.
And the Put, the living Guanyin of the Tide Sound Cave. Known everywhere for saving people from suffering. Her stepping up is huge.
You can almost feel the hope shift, and the Buddha gives her tools for the job.
He does. Three treasures. First, this amazing brocade cassock, the Tangan Spriti, supposedly stops you from being reincarnated.
Wow, okay. That's serious.
Then, a nine-ringed staff, boogie, for protection. Wards off harm.
Standard adventuring gear, but probably way better.
We'd think so. And then... the really interesting ones. Three magical hoops.
Hoops?
Yeah, with secret mantras. They're specifically to subdue powerful demons she might meet. Demons who could actually become disciples.
So recruit while you travel. Building the team on the go.
Kind of seems like it. These treasures are symbolic too, right? Liberation, protection, and guidance. Even forceful guidance if needed.
Right. So Guanyin heads down with Huayan Walker. He's got a big iron club.
1,000-pound one, yeah. He's the muscle. Guanyin carries the cassock openly, but keeps the hoops hidden. Smart move.
Very. And they have a quick stop first, Jade True Monastery.
Yeah, a brief meeting with the great immortal of the Golden Peak, like checking in before the real journey starts.
Yeah.
A little bridge between heaven and earth.
Okay, and the first real challenge.
The Flowing Sands River.
Yeah.
And this is not your average river.
No. How bad is it?
It's huge, incredibly dangerous. The text says even goose feathers sink. Nothing floats.
Goose feathers sink. Yikes. That paints a picture, a serious barrier.
Definitely. Symbolizes the kind of deep, chaotic obstacles on the path.
And out of this unfloatable river comes a monster.
Oh, yeah. And the description is intense. Good, like not quite blue, not quite black, just murky, unhealthy looking.
Uh-huh.
Short, stocky, bare feet, eyes like oceet, lamps under a stove, glowing, mouth like a butcher's fire pit. Tusks like swords, wild red hair.
Okay, I get it. Terrifying, nightmare fuel.
Definitely emphasizes the danger.
And this creature attacks.
Straight away. But Queen steps in with his club. They fight right there on the riverbank.
Yeah.
The monster's got a weapon too, a treasure staff.
So Horian's earning his keep already.
Absolutely. It shows the kind of resistance they're going to face.
But then there's a twist, right? This monster isn't just some random river beast.
Not at all. Turns out he's Sha Wujing. He used to be the curtain-rolling general in heaven.
A general? What did he do?
He broke a cup. A glass cup at the peach banquet.
He broke a cup and got banished to a monster-infested river for that. Seems a bit harsh.
Well, maybe heavenly parties have very strict rules. But yeah, banished, and he gets tormented to stabbed by flying swords every week. He says he has to eat humans just to survive.
Man, from celestial general to that. Shows anyone can fall, I guess.
And introduces that theme of redemption. He's suffering. He's done wrong. He's primed for a change.
And Guanyin offers it, a way out.
Exactly. She offers him the chance to become a disciple of the scripture seeker, to atone. She even points out the skulls.
Oh, right. The 9 skulls floating on the river. The only things that don't sink. Grim.
Very grim. A reminder of his past and why he needs this chance.
So does he take it?
He does. Pretty readily, actually. Yeah. He sees it as a lifeline. Guanyin gives him a monastic name.
Sha Wujing, right.
Yeah, and tells him to wait there for the scripture seeker.
Yeah.
So that's disciple number 1, potentially.
Okay, one down. Journey continues.
Onwards they go. Next stop, a high mountain. And guess what?
Don't tell me. Another monster.
Bingo. And another vivid description. Kendo ki, like a droopy, dirty lotus pod for a mouth. Ears like fans, sharp tusks, a snout like a fire basin.
Good grief. Are all the banished celestial beings this visually striking?
Seems that way. This one's armed too, a 9-toothed rake and a bow.
A rake. Okay, so another fight. Huion again.
Yep, Huion versus the rake-wielding mountain demon. Clubs and rakes clashing. More action, showing the challenges.
And who does this guy turn out to be? Let me guess. Former high-ranking official.
You got it. Zhu Wuning, formerly Marshal Tianpeng. Big shot in the Celestial River Forces.
Marshal Tianpeng, what was his crime? Please don't say he dropped something.
Hey, no. Worse. He flirted with Chanji, the moon goddess.
Huh. That'll do it. So punishment.
2,000 hammer blows, banishment, and, well, a bit of bad luck on the reincarnation front.
Mm.
He ended up in a pig's body.
A pig. Oh, man. So he lives in a cave, eats people, had a wife called Mistress Mao.
Yep. That's the backstory. Mistress Mao is deceased now, apparently. Another fallen figure with a complicated past.
So Guanyin offers him the same deal. Redemption.
She does. But this guy... Zhu Wuning. He's way more cynical than Sha Wujing.
How so?
He's like, redemption, what's the point? Eating people is easier. He kind of mocks the rules, heavenly or Buddhist. Doesn't seem keen at all.
Hmm. A bit more worldly wise, or maybe just world weary. Harder sell for Guanyin.
Definitely. He resists. But Guanyin keeps at it. Appeals to his practical side, suggests he could eat grains instead, you know, and emphasizes the chance to make up for his sins by joining the quest.
Does it work?
Eventually, yeah. He gives in, gets his monastic name, Zhu Wuning. Notice the Wu character again, like Sha Wujing.
Wu meaning awakening or understanding.
Exactly. So there's that connection. And he agrees to go vegetarian while he waits for the pilgrim.
Okay. Potential disciple number 2 recruited, albeit reluctantly. Who's next?
Next up, they spot a dragon, a jade dragon weeping in the sky.
A weeping dragon. What's the story?
He's the son of the West Sea Dragon King, Eirun, and he's facing execution.
Execution? For what? More party fouls.
He destroyed a precious pearl given by the Jade Emperor. Seems like property damage is a big deal like there.
Apparently. So Guanyin steps in.
She does. Pulls some strings, talks to the Jade Emperor, gets him pardoned.
She's got connections.
Seems so. But there's a condition, of course. His task is to be the scripture seeker's ride.
The ride.
Yeah. He has to transform into a white horse and carry the pilgrim.
Wow. From condemned dragon prince to noble steed. That's quite the career change. Final step.
Sun Wukong.
After 500 years stuck under a mountain, like in a stone box.
Exactly. And what's really striking is, well, he can still talk, immobilized, can't struggle. He uses this phrase, meaning.
Mean.
That each day feels like a whole year passing. It's incredibly evocative.
That's heavy. And the isolation, too.
Oh, absolutely. He laments having,
no one who understands him. No connection.
Precisely. It highlights just how utterly alone he is. And this leads directly to his plea to the Bodhisattva.
Right. He asks for help.
A very direct, desperate plea.
Basically, please, Bodhisattva, do me a favor. Save me.
And it's not just what he says, right? There's that poem nearby, too.
Yes, exactly. The poem almost serves as, like, a commentary on his fall.
A summary of his mistakes.
Pretty much. It calls him a monkey demon who didn't serve properly, got carried away with his own heroism when he was younger.
Uh-huh.
And it explicitly links his being trapped to the Buddha, to Tathagata, because of those past actions.
And it asks when he'll get to show his power again.
Yes. When will he stretch out and prove himself again? It mentions the peach banquet chaos again, the Dushu palace incident.
So it really hammers home the reasons.
It does. And it even acknowledges his former power. Unmatched in battle, unifying, holding authority in the highest heavens. Acknowledging the glory before the fall. Really emphasizes how far he's come down.
Definitely. And there's one more detail about the mountain itself.
Oh, yeah. What's that?
Right on the summit, there's an inscription. The six-character mantra.
That's a very famous Buddhist mantra, isn't it?
Extremely significant.
Yeah.
Often tied to compassion, purification. Its presence there really underscores the spiritual force involved in keeping him contained.
And the text says who put it there.
Explicitly. It says it was placed there by Tathagata, the Buddha.
So no doubt about the source of his imprisonment. Immense power holding him.
Exactly.
Okay, so we have this picture. Unbelievably powerful being, brought low, full of regret, desperate.
But he recognizes Guanyin, and he immediately asks for help, for de-rescue.
I bet he does. 500 years is a long time out.
It certainly is. A direct consequence of his rebellion.
But Guanyin must be wary, right? Given his track record.
Oh, definitely. She hesitates. But the Monkey King, he seems genuinely sorry. Expresses real remorse. Says he wants to change. Wants to follow a proper path.
Is this for real, or is he just saying what she wants to hear?
That's the question, isn't it? But Guanyin offers him the chance. Same deal, basically. Become a disciple of the scripture seeker. Follow the Buddhist path. And then she'll arrange his freedom.
A conditional release. So what does Monkey say?
He jumps at it. Eagerly agrees. And interestingly, his name, Sun Wukong.
Already has the Wu character, awakening understanding, just like the others.
Exactly. It's like they were all destined for this path of awakening, despite their very different, very troubled pasts. It's a team of reformed characters Guanyin's putting together.
Amazing. So she's got her three disciples plus a horse lined up, all waiting. What's the final step in this chapter?
Guanyin and Huiyan finally arrive in Shanyan, the capital city of the Tang Dynasty.
Back in the human world proper.
Right. They disguise themselves as ordinary mendicant monks. Their job now is to find the actual scripture seeker.
The main character of the quest.
The one destined for this journey. They find a place to stay, a local earth god shrine, and tell the local gods to keep their arrival quiet.
Laying low. Setting the stage for the next act.
Precisely. The pieces are being moved into place.
Wow. Okay, so that brings us through this chapter. We've gone from the Buddha's decree in heaven.
Mm-hmm. Down to Guanyin taking on the mission.
And recruiting this incredible, frankly problematic team along the way. Sha Wujing, Zhu Wuning, the dragon horse, and Sun Wukong waiting in the wings.
Yeah, quite the lineup. You've seen the challenges, the fights, and these really flawed individuals who are somehow being brought together for this massive undertaking.
So, turning it over to you, listening in. What do you think really drives these characters? A banished general, a disgraced marshal, a doomed dragon, a legendary rebel? Why sign up for this journey?
Yeah, what does it say about redemption?
Yeah.
About change? seeing their pasts, their mistakes, their suffering? Can people really transform that fundamentally?
So next time we'll see how Grognon actually finds the scripture seeker in the middle of bustling Chang'an.
Yeah, the search begins.
It's just fascinating how this epic story, packed with gods and demons and magic, really kicks off with Grognon basically talent scouting among fallen angels and monsters. It really makes you think about where great journeys start, doesn't it? And the potential hidden in the most unexpected, even flawed places or people.
Absolutely. Until next time.